KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up in this morning's opening forum hour, we'll focus on the economy and on recent downturn indicators, as well as the big news that broke this past weekend about the federal takeover, the loaning giants Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, and how that's apt to affect the overall economic outlook. I'll have a panel and your calls and emails next after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's forum program. On Friday, the nation's unemployment numbers leaped to a five-year high exceeding 6%. Over 600,000 jobs have been lost this year, and according to Department of Labor statistics, there were 84,000 lost just last month. Wall Street rebounded on Friday, but mortgage delinquencies continue to go up and consumer spending to drop. And on Sunday, the federal government, under the leadership of Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson, announced that the two companies responsible for nearly half of the U.S. mortgage market would be under government control. The takeover of Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae by the government is designed to stem the crisis of confidence in the housing market. And following the takeover, Asian stocks jumped the most in 8 months, and U.S. futures also jumped, and Wall Street seems to be up today as a response to that as well. But prospects for the U.S. economy continue to look rather bleak to many analysts, and we want in this forum hour to bring to your attention the nature of these kinds of ongoing economic concerns, as well as what Sunday's government takeover, the two mortgage-leading giants, is apt to mean for the overall economic picture, as well as how and in what ways that overall picture might be brightened. So let me tell you who is joining us for this morning's discussion. We want to welcome, first of all, Peter Coy, who is economics editor of Business Week and joins us this morning from New York City. Good morning.
Good morning.
Glad to have you. Also glad to have Ken Goldstein with us, who is an economist with the Conference Board. They're a nonprofit business and research organization located in New York City, and he joins us this morning from Linden, New Jersey, near Newark. Good morning.
Good morning.
And we also welcome Lydia Ortega, who is here with us in studio, who chairs the Department of Economics at San Jose State University. And welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning. Glad to have you all here. And actually, let me begin, Peter Coy, with you, and let's talk about Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Been a lot of talk about it on NPR all morning. Likely lower mortgage rates, maybe greater credit availability. But is this really going to stabilize home prices, or is that still a long way off?
I was speaking to a guy I know in Fort Lauderdale who's a real estate broker down there, and he said people are missing the point. They're saying, he says the people who come looking at houses in Fort Lauderdale are still kind of sitting on their hands. They usually, mortgage rates are not the problem for them. Sometimes the problem may be availability of mortgage, but he said the big thing is that people can't qualify for loans, especially refinancing is a huge problem. You got an adjustable rate mortgage. Now you want to refinance out of it. And you can't because you go to get that place appraised and it comes in too low. You can't qualify for a new loan. This Fannie and Freddie takeover does nothing to raise the value of homes. You know, nobody's going to make a loan even after this bailout on a property that's worth less than the loan that the people are looking for. So I think it does something, but the idea that this is the end to the housing crisis, no way.
Well, what I'm hearing you say is the tight standards and fees will remain, and the wave of foreclosures is unlikely to reverse.
Right. I think the foreclosure rate is probably continuing higher.
It's kind of strange to see two companies of this size naturalized in a Republican administration. What about the risk for taxpayers of this?
Yeah, now that is a huge unknown here, because it is true that Paulson didn't just give away the store for nothing. He's actually making an investment, or potentially making an investment of substantial size in these companies. The taxpayer will get something in exchange for the money that it turns over. It'll get a senior preferred securities, and if there are loans made, they'll be secured loans, that is, collateralized by securities of those two institutions. So in, you know, the rosy scenario, the housing market won't go down too much further. These companies will do well. Their stocks will have some value. The securities that are backing loans will do well. And it could be no cost at all to the taxpayer. The bleaker scenario, of course, is that everything goes the other direction and it gets really, really expensive. And just really hard to say at this stage, even within an order of magnitude, what the amount of money might be.
Well, speaking of bleak scenarios, recession, at least according to many analysts, appears to be here. Growth is only occurring by our selling to other countries, housing and gas moving up. I mean, you know the litany. Seems we're not, nobody's buying U.S. cars, and maybe manufacturing problems are spreading to the financial sector. What all this means, particularly in light of this recent takeover, doesn't suggest optimism, and yet you have some optimism. Why?
Well, I don't know how optimistic I am. I'm like basically throwing my hands up. But luckily, unlike Ken, I don't have to make a forecast of the economy. I'm sure Ken will come in later with his own view. I think there's radical uncertainty here, and we're in the middle. I mean, every time people say, okay, we've finally contained this problem, we're in the final innings, whatever metaphor you want to use, something new happens. I mean, the administrator of Fannie and Freddie said just a few months ago that there was no chance that they would ever have to be taken over. And now it's happened. So you almost can't trust any forecast you hear these days.
Well, one piece of good news, inflation's under control.
Well, yeah. I mean, that is surprising because with all the run-up in oil prices, you would really worry that inflation was out of control. Now, one of the reasons it's under control, of course, is the labor market is soft. Workers are not demanding more money, even though their productivity is rising. And that does give a free hand to the Fed to keep rates low. If rates were high, I mean, if inflation were high at this point, it would be very, very hard for the Fed to hold the line on rates. It would almost be forced to raise them. And now it can keep them low for an extended period of time without too much worry about resurging inflation. It's always a concern, of course.
Peter Coy, again, is economics editor of Business Week, and Ken Goldstein is with us as well from the Conference Board, an economist. Ken Goldstein, the banks have securitized these mortgages, and that could be a big problem in the overall economic picture. How do you see things?
Well, it is the big problem, and in fact, that's, in a sense, what is behind all this. You know, we need to step back and look at this. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac not only hold half of all the $10 trillion in mortgage debt outstanding, but are really behind about 70% of all new mortgages. They were never meant to be this big. They were never meant to play this big a role. And in fact, long before housing got into a problem, that was a big debate. Are they supposed to be this big? Are they supposed to be private? Are they supposed to be public? That's really been a debate for some time. And clearly what has happened now is a step to sort of, you know, come in and declare that, yes, indeed, they are government agencies. They're not going to do anything right away to change falling home prices. What they could do is free up some of the mortgage money so that at least a few more people can get a mortgage. And secondarily, this could be the first step. It's not the last step, it's only the first step to bring the credit markets back into a more normal operation, something we haven't seen in the last year. So I think that there's at least a silver lining here at some point. But this is not the last chapter. This is only the latest chapter.
Could there also be a silver lining in the fact that Asian markets seem to rally as well as our own markets here in light of this takeover, which maybe might do something to diminish all this panic, concern about panic in the global market?
Well, that panic that we first saw last August, and it was the panic right about not just the mortgage money, but the money leveraged off of the mortgage money that brought down Bear Stearns last winter, and it's still a major concern. So clearly there now is a sense in the market that the U.S. federal government, you and me as taxpayers, mm-hmm. are behind Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. That's sort of at least the initial reaction is that that's taking some of the money that has been sitting on the sideline and bringing it into the market. Again, you know, part of the problem is not just housing, but that credit has been so frozen. And credit for a modern market economy is like blood for the body. You freeze it up, you freeze up the body. So if, as a result of all of this, we get a more normal credit market, that's going to take at least some time. It's not going to happen right away. But that could be the first step in finally getting us out of this very weak, very soft economy. But I would caution. I disagree with Peter. I think inflation is a problem.
Well, why?
Well, look, the number that we got on Friday, not just another decline in jobs, and we're going to get more of the same, but that average hourly wages, which a year ago were rising at a 4% rate of growth, they're only down to 3.6. So that labor is still expensive, and now the productivity growth is slowing. Less of that is being absorbed by companies, is going to force them to raise prices.
It's a pretty lousy labor market, you'd say?
It not only is lousy, but as we just said just this morning with our Employment Trends Index, not only are the job declines going to continue, but they're going to go over 100,000. We are already over 6% unemployment rate. We're probably headed to at least 6.5%.
And we've seen a decrease in corporate budgets over the last four quarters, have we not?
And that's going to continue for another quarter or two, no matter the resolution here in terms of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
So from Ken Goldstein's point of view, this is not a recession. This is worse than a recession.
This is worse than a recession. You know, if you think back to one of those swimming contests in Beijing 2 weeks ago, this is like a swimmer stuck in the middle of the pool, swimming as fast as he can, not getting any closer to the end, and his arms are getting tired.
How do we get back to normalcy?
This is the first step. The first thing we have to do is to get the credit market. Again, credit's the lifeblood of the economy. If we get the credit market starting to function more normally, that's the first step. And that could, perhaps maybe by spring or summer of 2009, help to get us back into a more robust economy. It's not going to happen faster than that.
Again, Ken Goldstein is an economist with the Conference Board. Lydia Ortega joins us this morning here in studio. She's chair of the Department of Economics at San Jose State University. And let's talk about the takeover from your point of view, Professor Ortega. How do you see it?
I think this just gives companies breathing room. This is just the plane was crashing, if you want to use an analogy, and we got a pilot in there, but it's going to crash sometime. You know, when we talk about a bailout, we're talking about what Ken was mentioning, your money, my money. Everybody's relieved now because the losses from bad loans are going to be shared by the entire American taxpaying public. You know, this is a patient on life support, and it, you know, when do you want to let them off? It can be quick, or it can be in 5 years, or it can be 10 years. If we have the government running Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, remember, this is the same group that's been running our Social Security program, okay? I'm not optimistic. I'm not optimistic that there's been any systemic
change. The Bush administration wanted to privatize Social Security, and now they want to nationalize Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae.
And the track record is not there.
Well, what do you suggest? What's the remedy for life support here, or is there a remedy? Just pull the plug?
You know, I looked at the GDP numbers to see what was going down, and it's not really consumer spending. It's not government spending, of course. It's mainly gross domestic investment, and the part of gross domestic investment that's going down the most is residential construction. So we have residential decreasing. Inventories are decreasing. We're seeing this employment decreasing because of people going into net sell-off on inventory. So that gives us a little bit of leeway with respect to inflation, I think, but not for long.
But you don't think we're in a recession?
No, I don't. Not yet. Not by the numbers. We don't have two consecutive quarters.
Even though, as Ken Goldstein pointed out, we're going up to close to 100, we're probably going to pass 100,000 as far as jobs.
I'm old enough to know when unemployment rates were, you know, much higher than they are now. And I remember when we started talking about 5.5% being the natural rate of unemployment. So we're above that, but I'm not ready to call it a recession.
But you're feeling it's tougher here in California. Why?
I think the regulation. So you asked for a solution, you know, and I've heard Peter and Ken talk about the fact that it's hard to qualify for a loan, to come up with your median income and be able to buy the median single-price family home. That's because the median single-price family home is so outrageously priced. And let's go back to that fundamental. Why do we have high housing prices? There's been a lot of studies out of Harvard, out of the University of Washington, that have looked at this question and found that the regulations are driving the prices. One study out of the University of Washington an economist there named Eicher, estimates $200,000 the price of a medium home is because of regulations.
So by going green, we're hurting ourselves?
There are trade-offs. You know, going green means that we have to give up something else. Okay, and it's just a trade-off. And it's okay to go green. It's okay to keep land, but it means that you're going to have higher prices. And then if you have a government that wants to help you and do everything it can for you to afford that higher-priced home, we're going to have risky debt.
Could it be a silver lining, though, that the home prices are declining as fast as they are? Could you see that as a possible silver lining?
I don't see home construction increasing. I don't see supply going up. I see actually rental rates going up, which means people are losing their homes, getting out, can't sell them, and they're going someplace else just to rent.
So where is the silver lining in all this for you?
There's a silver lining in this. I'm not quite sure I see one, not in this crisis.
Well, Ken Goldstein, you do, I think, even though you say this is like a perfect storm, like nothing we've ever seen before.
I think that the sliver of a silver lining is what I've been talking about in terms of the credit market. I want to come back to this point about Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. They've been the favorite political football for a long time in the whole red state, blue state divide about whether or not the government, you and I, should be subsidizing housing investment vis-a-vis any other investment. And clearly that has been a political hot potato for some time. There's a reason we're doing this now, and it's only partly related to housing. It's also related to the political cycle. And the question about whether it should be public or should be private, that remains to be determined. And also just how big a role Fannie and Freddie Mac. Again, 70% of all new mortgages are going through these two agencies. So I think that there's some longer-term questions here. The one point I would make is we've been here before. In the Resolution Trust Corporation about two decades ago, taxpayer money was also put at risk. Taxpayers made money on that deal. At the end of the day, I think taxpayers are going to make money on this deal too.
But we don't know, again, for example, possibility of a Boeing strike, Hurricane Ike. I mean, there are a lot of things that are up in the air. Gustav wasn't as bad as we expected or many anticipated. But all of these kinds of things obviously disrupt and have their overall effect.
Had their overall effect, and this is an economy so weak, there isn't really much room to absorb one of these shocks. And it looks like Ike might go right through the area that Gustav just sidestepped. So, you know, whether it's the Boeing strike or Ike or something else, this is an economy so weak it wouldn't take much to push it into contraction.
Well, let me go back to you, Peter Coy, and just get your sense of how all this. We got an election a couple months away. Ken Goldstein mentioned the political cycle. What are we seeing from your perspective as far as the candidates are concerned, where the economy sizes up and how they're reacting to this latest takeover?
Well, starting with their reaction to the latest takeover, I think both the Obama's campaign and McCain's have said, yes, something like this had to happen. When you're in a crisis, sometimes ideology takes a back seat. And the very fact that these two enormous companies have been taken over by the federal government, it's pretty amazing because it's completely against the Republican free market spirit to do something like this. And certainly Paulson himself is a free market type. But I think their hand was forced. They said, we can't stick to this philosophy that we stand aside and let the market take care of itself, because the market is not taking care of itself, and the whole economy could be dragged down with really frightening possibilities. So, and I think McCain understands that as well from a Republican point of view. It's kind of less of a surprise that the Obama people would endorse an idea like this. But what they're all saying is that they want to make sure that it doesn't turn into a bailout for, investors who foolishly put their money into the shares. And, in fact, it's not, because the arrangement, the shareholders of Fannie and Freddie are going to be left with either absolutely nothing or virtually nothing. The shares have fallen to a fraction, a couple of percent of their peak levels. So there is pain being suffered by people who made the mistakes. The CEOs of the two companies are going to be booted out, although they will have a while to advise.
They'll also have some pretty good parachutes.
Yeah, that's true. And that's going to stick in a lot of people's craw, although the sum of money is still infinitesimal compared to the hundreds of billions of dollars we're talking about here in potential government exposure.
So, Lydia Ortega, since the housing crisis is really in some ways what a lot of this is based on, a lot of this concern, how do we correct it? How do we get it behind us?
How do we bring prices down and supply up? Then we have to take a look at all of the things that have been negating the free market's ability to bring houses, affordable houses, into this area. And it may be something that the residents in the area don't want to have, really. It's nice to contribute to affordable housing, but just don't build too much of it in my neighborhood kind of thing. But then the consequence of that is we're going to have the higher prices. And California, by the way, is the second lowest in the nation in terms of home ownership, and it's falling. So that American dream, I think, we're leaving it behind in California particularly.
And prices are rising and less money coming in. That's not a good recipe.
Well, when there's high housing prices, you're not going to have jobs come into the area because the employees are few and they can't find places to live. You're going to have everything linked to it. It's like playing SimCity, you know, the kind of simulation games on the computer that my son likes to do, where he controls all of the different actors and puts in different things in place. Well, you're going to end up not having jobs coming into this area. A lot of nice, very expensive homes with high density, but perhaps not a lot of people who want to live here. The other thing we have right now is Schwarzenegger is considering a bill to control urban sprawl. It's another set of incentives, and it's based on trying to deregulate the markets. But I have to
also is tied to his the bill that went through on greenhouse gases, we should mention.
Right. Yeah. Okay. But one of the issues there, though, is it's exactly like what they did in Seattle in 1990. And that's the city with the $200,000 higher prices related to the regulations.
Let me open up the phone lines. We're talking in the broader sense about the economy, but also talking about the recent news that came across this weekend of the federal takeover of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And you may indeed want to join us. And if you do, all you have to do is call our toll-free number. If you have something you'd like to say, by all means, say it here. Or if you have a question you want to ask one of our distinguished panel, then certainly your questions are welcome. Our toll-free number is 866-733-6786. Lines are open and available to you. And whether you're listening to us on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite, you're welcome to be part of the program. Again, it's toll-free, 866-733-6786. Or you can send an email. And the email address here is simply forum@kqed.org. Talking with Lydia Ortega, who is here with us in studio, who chairs the Department of Economics at San Jose State University. And with us by phone from Linden, New Jersey, is Ken Goldstein, who is economist with the Conference Board, a nonprofit business and research organization based in New York City, and Peter Coy with us from New York City. He's economics editor for Business Week. When we return, your calls and emails. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We set up a program this morning to talk about the economy in light of recent statistics, high unemployment and lower than expected consumer spending. And then over the weekend, a major event occurred, as many of you know by now, the takeover of the two big mortgage lenders, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And so we're talking about the economy and about the takeover and what it all means in terms of economic prospects with respect to an economy that has been going south and that has suffered certainly some malaise. Lydia Ortega is with us in studio. She chairs the Department of Economics for San Jose State University, and Ken Goldstein is joined us by phone this morning, an economist with the Conference Board. They are a not-for-profit, I should say, instead of nonprofit, a not-for-profit business and research organization. And Peter Coy, economics editor of Business Week, is also with us. We're going to go to your calls here in just a moment. I want to go to some emails first. And maybe Lydia Ortega, just maybe some clarity here from one of our listeners who says, could you be more specific about what building regulations are driving prices up? Are we talking about earthquake safety? I don't know.
No, it's more like land use regulations, zoning regulations, the capricious nature, the fact that developers come in and there's no set guidelines. So even if they did everything right, those guidelines are just guidelines and they can be changed by the city councils. A lot of local regulations that are unpredictable.
And Ken Goldstein, listener, sends this email question. I've seen quotes from Paulson in regard to decreasing the current portfolios of Freddie and Fannie starting in 2010. Is this true? If so, what will this portend for the American housing market and the availability of credit in the financial system?
It's a very good question. It really leads to the question about why this is being done now. If it had been done in January, Barney Frank probably would have been the one rather than Paulson. And clearly what conservatives have never been comfortable with is the size of Freddie Mac. There is clearly at least a wish to reduce the, give the 800-pound gorillas a strong diet. So I'm not the least bit surprised that the speculation is about downsizing the now taken over Freddie and Fannie Mac.
Peter Coy, a listener named Craig, writes, could you please ask about the news we keep hearing that the takeover of Fannie and Freddie will probably wipe out the common stockholders, but will the estimated $20 billion that this bailout might cost the taxpayers be mainly used to pay off the preferred stockholders? Do your guests know what the totals are outstanding for the common and preferred stocks for these companies?
It's looking like the preferred are going to get hit pretty hard, too. There was no specific provision in the plan announced yesterday that would preserve the value of preferred shares. The government's new issue of preferred shares that will be held by the government is going to be senior to either the common or the existing preferred. So bottom line, for people who don't care about the details, the taxpayers are going to get preference over the previous owners of the company who are going to be pretty much wiped out.
The shareholders are going to be the ones hurt most by this.
Yes.
Yeah. Let me go to our callers. Alex, you're up first. Good morning.
Hi. I had a question about inflation. It seems like people are saying inflation is under control, but my understanding is they don't include energy, and they also they include housing, which is taking a big dive. Is it possible that the dive in housing prices has actually skewed what the real cost of living is for people in the United States?
Well, let's hear from you on this, Peter Craig, because you were saying that inflation was good news and Ken Goldstein was kind of taking issue with you before. Here are your thoughts for the caller.
Yeah, I want to mention one thing that Ken mentioned earlier about pay going up over the past year. We had a really strong increase in productivity of the American worker, and because of that, the cost per unit of output, so-called the unit labor cost, actually fallen. In other words, it's costing less in labor cost to produce a unit of goods and services, which is excellent news. I mean, there's many ways you can cut this, and you can't trust all the statistics, but it does seem as though the huge run-up we've had in energy prices has not spilled over to higher labor costs. And to be more specifically answering the caller's question, the Consumer Price Index does include energy as well as food. Sometimes you'll hear people quote the CPI without energy, which of course is lower. Although lately, energy prices have been falling at a rapid clip, and that's actually one reason that people tend to leave energy out because it fluctuates so much.
Bring on more callers, Rebecca. Thank you for waiting. You're on.
Hi, thanks. I just wanted to comment on one of the speakers said that housing prices is a big factor with the market, and that is that my husband and I bought a house in 2005 on an adjustable rate mortgage that was written only under his name, and we were told by our then broker, oh, you won't see 6 months and this payment will refinance you, and then, of course, lo and behold, as time went on, we were unable to refinance. So we weren't able to work with the mortgage companies, although we tried for over a year to talk to them and find some way to refinance. We ended up going into foreclosure, but the odd thing is that since prices came down and the house was only under my husband's name, With a new broker, we were able to qualify for a loan under just my name, and since the prices came down, I was able to qualify for enough to buy a house. So we bought, and at the end, we got much more house for, you know, over $150,000 less. And we would have been happy to have stayed in our house if we had the opportunity, but the system just didn't have a way of supporting us in doing that. So it was a big lose, you know, but at the end of the day, we were lucky and came out, you know, in good shape. Hmm. So I think the pricing is very significant.
You comment, Professor Ortega?
I think what we need to look at is the long-term trend of housing availability. In 2005, you bought a very, very expensive house, and I'm really sorry to hear about the foreclosure. I know that's a difficult thing to do, and glad that you were able to come out of that in a good way. But we're not seeing growth in residential investment, and that's a big component of gross domestic product. It's part of what's going to keep the workforce in this area and keep people living in this area in a comfortable way.
Good luck to you, Rebecca. Thank you for the call. Let me go to more of your calls, and we'll go to Paul. Morning, Paul.
Good morning. I'm a real estate broker, and I've observed that the real issue here is supply and demand, and there's an inordinate supply of distressed homes on the market, and that's what's been driving prices down. What I recommend is that the lenders who have distressed borrowers recast their loans so that the basis of the loan is in line with today's current market. Forgive them for whatever payments they might be behind, but then be able to take a participation in the future appreciation of the property. You know, make a deal with the homeowner. Say, stay in your home. If you stay there for 2 years, we'll share the appreciation when it goes up. And if we can get those distressed properties off the market, we'll have a more normal market, and everybody's value will go back up.
Sound like a plan to you, Ken Goldstein?
Actually, it does sound like a plan, and it hits on one of the things that's absolutely fundamental to this entire story. You have a number of folks who had a mortgage, who still have a mortgage, or who just foreclosed on it, and the value of that mortgage, given how far prices have come down, is in many cases more than what that house is worth in today's market. That's what's behind a lot of this distress, and again, it's the distress that puts on the mortgage money, which then distresses all the money leveraged off of that. That's what's kept this credit market, so crazy. That's what in essence brought down Bear Stearns, and right now, that's one of the fundamental keys as to why Freddie Mae and Fannie Mae are now fully government agencies.
Why do you suspect, I don't know if this is necessarily a question in your bailiwick, Ken, but why do you suspect that this story wasn't really the story, let's say, that Enron was? Because there are a lot of people being hurt by this, as we've said. Certainly shareholders are being hurt pretty badly, and, you know, taxpayers are in the bailout.
Enron manipulated the market, and Enron essentially lied to investors and lied to the public. I don't think that that's the case here. I think this business about the value of the mortgage and the value of the home at current prices has far more to do with the immediacy of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and secondarily, all the money leveraged off of that, which we're not even talking about, with two or three times as much money as involved in the actual mortgages. And that's what's frozen up the credit markets, a bigger deal, bigger problem than anything we saw with Enron, anything we saw with TechRec, anything we've seen in the last 20, 30, 40, 50 years.
Again, Ken Goldstein is an economist with the Conference Board, and our next caller joining us from Cookeville, Tennessee, is Juana. Good morning.
Hi.
Hi.
I need to find out, is this credit crunch kind of similar to the one Japan had some years ago, where the banks were not lending any money, and they were just so scared that people was not going to repay the loans? And I see that a lot over here. Is it kind of similar, and how did the Japanese get out of it?
Analogous to you in some ways, Peter Coy, or not?
Yeah, I think it's a very good point. And one of the greatest fears for the U.S., the Federal Reserve, and so on, is that we're going to get into a Japanese-like situation where you have these zombie banks that are doing their best to prop up their zombie borrowers by continuing to extend loans to them. Just to the proceeds of the loans go towards paying the interest on the old loans so that the banks don't have to recognize losses by writing those off. And so they stagger along, never really making any progress. With the help of the central bank, this is the Japan I'm talking about here, extraordinarily low interest rates were designed strictly to keep those banks on life support, and credit is not going to new players who actually need money to expand their businesses. And it just dragged on and on in Japan. We desperately want to avoid that. We want to get the banks recapitalized. That means restored to good financial strength, where they will once again begin to lend freely to people with good prospects and strong credit. And Bernanke, you know, was a student of the Great Depression when he was a professor at Princeton. He's acutely aware of the danger of going into a Japan situation or another depression. And so he was consulted heavily on this Fannie and Freddie takeover. I think he and the rest of the Fed are going to do their best to, even if it costs a lot of money in the short term, it could end up being economical in the long term to get in there and restore the financial stability of the American institutions, banks, and investment banks.
Peter Coy, again, is economics editor of Business Week, and Lydia Ortega is chair of the Department of Economics at San Jose State. And here, Professor Ortega is one of our listeners kind of dovetailing with this, but bringing up a question. He says, as prices continue to increase at the cash register and the prices of assets continue to decrease at record paces, what do you have to say about debt deflation? Weren't we supposed to be aggressively combining interest rate cuts and fiscal stimulus designed to stave off the current crisis from becoming an even larger economic slump? We're looking more and more like Japan in the 80s.
I would have to agree with the caller that we are, and also this is something that Kenneth mentioned, the economy is fragile. It can't take, it doesn't have the backup to take very many hits. And so I would just try to answer your question by pointing out that in California, we have a unique situation that people are talking about higher taxes, whether in sales taxes or other type of revenue increases to pay off our deficit for the state. That's another hit. I don't think we can take it. And as Peter was talking about the Great Depression, this is not the time to be increasing taxes in California.
Is this a time for a second stimulus package?
The stimulus package has a very moderate impact because some of your rebate check went to paying off existing debt. Some of it went into savings. Some of it you bought some foreign goods and services. Some of it you bought domestic goods and services. And that little fraction is a part that got us a second quarter boost. I don't say a stimulus package. If we can't decrease taxes, then let's decrease some of the other things that people have been doing in lieu of raising taxes, and that's raising regulations. Those are a tax on doing business. And that's a way of giving people money back in the form of not costing them to do permits and to negotiate a labyrinth of regulations that can have some productive stimulus activity.
Well, speaking of taxes, here's a listener, Ken Goldstein, who says, are the taxpayers going to get anything out of these takeovers? They've been paying out dividends to shareholders. Would we now be considered shareholders?
Well, if we are, we're out of luck because one of the first things that they announced is that they're going to suspend all dividends. So nobody's going to get any, at least for a while. But this business about taxes, I mean, one of the things we have to understand, aside from, you know, what's going on today in the housing market, is that over the next 8 years, we've got to spend a lot of money to help fix our infrastructure so no more bridges fall down. We've got to spend money on the baby boom generation that's about to retire. We're not going to be able to get out of our obligation in Iraq and Afghanistan anytime real soon. And we start from a $500 billion deficit. You know, if you're going to explain that we're going to even just hold the line on taxes, let alone bring taxes down, how are we going to pay for those four things? It's very likely, both at the federal level, at the state level, and at the city level, taxes, not over the next 4 months, but over the next 4 years, taxes are going to go up.
Peter Coy, another question from a listener, Brendan down at Stanford, says, Can you comment on the implication of the government bailout on the value of our currency? The U.S. government just added a $5 trillion liability to its balance sheet, coupled with the trade and budget deficits. We seem to be locked into a national option ARM will never pay back. So why is the dollar up so much?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think one reason is that this is not truly a new liability, at least in the view of the markets, because they had a feeling already that the U.S. government ultimately was on the hook for Fannie and Freddie. And all that's happened now is that we've made that explicit. That's why the market's not too surprised. I think the reason that the market is up today is people are optimistic, at least for today, that this is going to ultimately strengthen the housing market and thus the overall economy. Now, it could be that the mood will change and they'll get skittish about this, and the dollar could face a crisis. It's easy to imagine panic growing among some of the huge holders of U.S. dollars and dollar-denominated securities like Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and treasuries. Certainly the Asian central banks were enormously dependent on them. If they stopped buying, slowed their buying, or worst of all, sold, the dollar would plunge.
We will plunge our way into some more calls here. Frank from Pleasant Hill, good morning.
Yes, it seems like this crisis has been created by homeowners who have adjustable rate mortgages, the rates are increasing beyond the level for them to pay. And instead of, you know, one of the previous callers called about bailing out the homeowners and giving them some fixed rate mortgages as opposed to bailing out the banks. And I was wondering if anybody's done a calculation as to how much it would cost to bail out homeowners as opposed to bailing out the banks. And sometimes I wonder if this crisis is being milked for benefit of somebody other than the homeowners and letting it proceed as opposed to just go straight to the nub of the problem and solve it. I was wondering if they had done that right at the beginning, what, a year or two ago, if where we'd be at and how much would have been spent to date.
Mm, Peter Coy.
Well, that's a tough one. Mm-hmm. Most people think you need a two-pronged approach, some money directed specifically at the homeowners and some aimed at helping rebuild the balance sheets of the banks. I wish I could come up with some numbers on that, but I would say the idea that you could have arrested this 2 years ago so we never would have had this crisis is probably wrong, just because prices got so high and so many loans were made at those artificially high prices that something had to give, some pain had to be felt, and it's being felt now. You can argue over what share it should be felt by the bankers versus the homeowners, but clearly this was not something that you could have nipped in the bud 2 years ago.
Again, Peter Coy is economics editor of Business Week, and Edward is our next caller. Edward, good morning. You're on Forum.
Morning. Good
yes,
morning.
Yes, sir. Good morning. Go ahead.
I have a bond, a long-term bond with for the Federal National MTG Association. Will those bonds be lost?
What do you think, Ken Goldstein?
Probably not, although the payment schedule might be stretched out.
Can I jump in on that?
Yeah, go ahead, Peter.
That's Fannie Mae.
Yeah.
We've talked about how the stockholders are going to get wiped out, but the bondholders are actually strengthened by this. The prices of those Fannie Mae bonds have gone up today with the government stepping in. So you're in better shape now than you were on Friday.
It's heartening to hear, I'm sure. Thank the caller, and we'll get Fran on next. Fran, thanks for waiting.
Yes, hi. My question is, why don't these regulatory agencies actually supervise the banks and these lending institutions that they're supposed to supervise in advance? What happens is that they don't supervise the regulatory agencies that have the responsibility of supervising don't seem to supervise until there's some really dire consequence inflicted on a consumer. In one instance, I think the FDIC could have avoided consumers losing money at IndyMac Bank totally if they just required member banks to put on a depositor's statement, under one tax ID, you're getting close to the limit. Here's a customer service number to call. So my whole thing is that the supervision comes too late, and the consumer has a terrible consequence when if, in fact, these regulatory agencies were actually supervising, they could avoid these consequences well in advance.
Well, what about overseeing and supervision, Lydia Ortega?
Fran, you're right, but it's even worse than you think, because the regulatory agencies through the legislature impart on these banks incentives to actually give out riskier loans. So when you feel that someone's going to cover this debt, you're not going to look at it as carefully as you would if you knew your personal bank stockholders were going to cover the debt. So by, you know, pretending to oversee, they give the banks some cover, and they also, that's what you mentioned, but they also give the banks the wrong kind of incentives to give out loans.
Thank you, Fran, for your call, and I want to go to more of your emails here. This is a listener, Peter Coy, who writes, what's the level of involvement of foreign money in American housing market? Naturally, foreign investors bought much of these mortgage-backed securities, but also there is no residency requirement for purchasing a single-family home in the United States. Then there are opportunities for participation by foreign money at all levels and in between. In addition, there are several nations holding large surpluses of Yankee dollars.
Yeah, well, I certainly don't think there should be a nationality or even residency requirement to buy a house in the U.S. Hey, you know, people want to buy a house, they should be able to. And I'm actually feel the same way about buying the mortgage-backed securities. It's a chicken and egg kind of thing. It's clear that these purchases have probably artificially inflated the dollar, which has in turn kind of starved the U.S. Manufacturing sector. But to me, the biggest problem is not foreigners buying here, but the fact that we need their money because we're not saving enough on our own. If the Americans collectively saved more of their incomes instead of spending it, we wouldn't have this dependence on foreign capital for housing and other things. We'd be more self-reliant.
Well, here's a related question, Ken Goldstein, from a listener named Gary, who says, to what extent was the U.S. takeover motivated by the central banks of China and the EU? The Chinese Central Bank, for example, holds $1 trillion of U.S. debt, including huge positions in Fannie and Freddie. Are these foreign entities driving U.S. economic policy?
No, U.S. politics are driving U.S. economic policy. We have, again, for the last 70 or 80 years, effectively subsidized an investment in housing. And money, and the argument has been for all this time that money going into housing is money not available for business to invest in new equipment that could indeed lead to an increase in employment. This is an old argument. The only wrinkle here is that if you bring foreign money in to housing, so they effectively they're taking advantage of domestic subsidized housing investment. Basically, we're guaranteeing foreign money. The problem here is, you know, we do. But that also works the other way around. In this globalized economy, there's no way to separate one country from the other. And that's also why this credit market problem I keep talking about is not a domestic one. It's an international one. And so part of the response we've seen, at least the first day, is the international financial market sort of applaud the fact that we've got at least resolution, temporary resolution, to some of these very long-standing questions.
It all gets back to how global the economy has become and how we're all interwoven, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Yeah. And let me go back to Lydia Ortega, professor of economics and chair of the economics department in San Jose State, who's here with us in studio. Here's a listener, David, who says, I'm struck by how little is being made of the connection between deregulation and economic catastrophe, particularly when it leads to taxpayer-funded bailouts. The savings and loan and now the Freddie Mac Fannie Mae messes come to mind. The Enron collapse is also noted as a fiasco, which could have been avoided with better oversight, whose effects spread to many thousands. Don't you think that if taxpayers were more aware of the risks of the high costs of deregulation and reduced supervision, they would ask Congress to re-regulate business, and wouldn't we be better off?
It's a very complex question. I'm going to give you one simple example where we see that markets are better self-regulators when they don't have the pretense of a government regulator, and that's in the meat industry. So you buy your steaks and they're USDA stamped choice. We have more E. coli bacteria outbreaks than we do salmonella poisonings with chicken. When you buy chicken, you buy Tyson's or you buy Foster's or you buy some other brand name. And when they have contaminated chicken meat, their sales are going to be going down so fast that they do everything that they're supposed to do to keep that meat safe for you. when you have an E. coli breakout, you don't know which producer, which butcher produced that. And there's no way for you as a consumer to individually punish those people. We're seeing some beef now that's coming out and being name-branded based on how the cows are fed. I think that's a movement in the right direction. But when you let somebody else regulate things and protect you, then you stop doing the job of protecting yourself.
Well, we're getting emails, of course, saying what this is all about is the free market's not working and all that, but this would be a discussion for another day or debate for another day. And in fact, we started off ironically talking about the labor index and the labor market and the number of loss of jobs. And by the way, I feel really it behooves me to mention that it's over 6% nationally, but for African-Americans, it's over 10%, and for Hispanics, it's up to 8%. But we've come to the conclusion of an hour where we've tried to talk a lot, and I think have succeeded in talking a lot, not only about the economy, but about what the takeover means for the economy. And I want to thank our guests who have certainly done us well here, Peter Coy, economics editor of the Business Week, who joined us from New York City, and Ken Goldstein, who is an economist with the Conference Board, a not-for-profit business and research organization, who joined us from Linden, New Jersey, and Lydia Ortega, who is chair of the Department of Economics at San Jose State, who joined us here in studio. I hope you'll join us for another hour of Forum. We're going to shift gears, and in the hour ahead, we're going to talk with Janice Bell all about grammar and punctuation and common errors in language. And you think you're making more of them now that you maybe are sending instant messages or text messages or emailing? That's going to be one of the things that we'll be talking about. But in addition, what are the most common errors that you make or that others make in terms of grammar and punctuation? We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, and an hour's repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. We want to thank you, our listeners, because we are appreciative of your listenership. Also extend thanks to our senior editor, Dan Zoll, and our producers, Judy Campbell, Kevin Guillory, and our engineer, Danny Bringer. Executive producer of Forum is Raul Ramirez. And for all of us here at Forum and KQED Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.